It's so good to see all of you here today. This is special, isn't it? When we have Easter season, you see people that you don't always see because visitors and family and all of that. I do know one lady that came to church one year, and she I had not seen her in a while, and she said, I like coming to your church and all of that. And I said, well, it's nice to see you. She says, yeah, but do you think you could change it up a little bit? And I said, well, why? And she says, because every time I come to your church, you're singing Christ the Lord is Risen Today. And for those of you who don't get that, that's an Easter hymn. Yeah, I know. It's all right. No, I'm just glad when people come to church. It's always an exciting time. But let me ask you this. What maps did you bring with you today? What maps did you bring? Now, I know you're probably thinking, maps? I haven't had a map in my car since I got my GPS, right? Could we live without GPS? Could we find ourselves without GPS? I must use that thing 12 times a day. I will tell you, it is they're lifesavers. But we do have maps. We have maps in our heads. We have maps in our lives. We live by maps in many, many ways. All of us, we're familiar with them. But we don't necessarily associate maps with Easter. Before British actor Robert Morley died, he requested that his credit cards be buried with him. And after his funeral, the London Times was filled with letters from people pondering their needs for the hereafter. One letter writer, Heather Turner, said that she wanted a good map buried with her. I want a good map because I have intense trouble finding my way in this life, and I am enormously worried about the next. So she needed a map. I'd like to get my hands on that map. But anyway, John Alexander, in his book, The Warrior's Edge, talks about reality maps. Now, a reality map is a way of looking at the world. It is, in essence, a belief system. And all of you have them. You have multiple ones. You may have one dominant one, but you have multiple ones. Let me give you an example. We're told that during the time of Homer, Greek sailors never sailed out of sight of land. They hugged the coast for their dear lives because their reality map told them that if you lost sight of land, there were monsters that would eat you. And so their reality map was stay close to land. It's the only way to stay alive. And it limited their travels. For centuries, European sailors navigated by reality maps that stated that the world was flat. And if you sailed too far, then the belief system said you'd just go over the edge. We credit Christopher Columbus changing all of that. It's interesting to observe, though, that Columbus's own reality map told him that he'd found India. When he really landed in the New World, which is why we give Native Americans the title of Indians. He thought he was in India. Bad map, Columbus. In 1597, another young sailor returned to his home in Madrid. His name was Juan Acombe, and he had been to the New World, and he was quite a celebrity. He brought all these cool things back with him from the New World. And they wanted to hear all of his stories about the adventures among the Indians, and he was wined and dined and the toast of the town by everyone, and then one day it rained. And he put on his cloak that he had brought with him from the New World. And he's walking around the streets of Madrid with his wonderful cape that kept the sun away, but it also kept the rain from getting to his clothes. People were so superstitious at the time, they thought that maybe this cape was magic. And he explained that they used this chemical called rubber to paint the inside of the material. It was used widely by the Indians in the New World, but the explanation did not satisfy the authorities, and they arrested him for having a cloak that kept him dry. Because, and we took them to trial, and the church leadership, of course, we always get our foot into the door and in our mouths too, but whatever, they said that he was a heretic because God intended the rain to fall on the just and the unjust, and being protected from that was against God's will. I mean, they didn't burn him, but it was one of those things that got him pretty close to the flames. Reality maps. People have their reality maps that it is not acceptable to not get wet when it rains. One more example. 1910, an Australian nurse named Elizabeth Kenny developed an effective treatment for polio. How many of you remember the polio epidemic? Yeah, I'm a little young for it, but it was in my neighborhood. I do remember hearing stories. Well, previous to this, in 1910, she came up with a way to treat polio patients that really helped. It had to do with warm baths and massages and other kinds of things. I don't really understand all of it, but I know that it worked. And she went to the doctors and said, you should try this. And what they were doing was splinting and immobilizing the affected limbs. And they were like, you know, this is working just fine. And she says, but no, it doesn't, because the legs, they wither and the nerves die and you're not helping them. But my system works. And they took her to court and eventually got her blackballed from every medical facility in Australia. And she had to leave. And she went to Europe, where other people, other doctors, whose reality maps were a little bit better, said maybe she's got something. And to this day, anybody that is afflicted with polio gets her treatment, because she was right. Her reality map said something. Other people's reality map said something else. I will tell you, having the wrong kind of reality map can be uncomfortable, but it can kill you as well. Because your reality map sets your expectations. The right reality maps can free you, can vindicate you, they can make you a hero for individuals, nations, and cultures, all empowered by belief systems. Reality maps are often the place where history is made and lives are decided. So what is your reality map? What is your belief system today? And I'm not asking you to recite a catechism, although we did that just a few minutes ago. What I'm asking you to do is to probe those beliefs that really guide your life. Now, I will tell you, this is hard. All through the last couple of weeks as I was developing these ideas, I kept challenging my reality maps. Are the drivers in Daytona Beach really as bad as I think that they are? Yeah, they are. They really are. Yeah, yeah. That reality map was pretty good. Yeah, I could live with that one. But what about other reality maps that say certain things that you assume, but they're wrong, or things that you think won't happen and do? I mean, our reality maps are important. There was a time when the reality map of all time was ended. The reality map that says when you die, you're done. That's it. You die? Oh, that's okay. A lot of people still have that idea. That great actress, Sarah Bernhardt, she had a peculiar way of looking at it, and so she had a coffin placed at the foot of her bed wherever she went, even when she was traveling. She had a coffin. I just can't imagine that, but it's a different kind of reality map. Do you know that Methodist pastors, when they would do their circuit riding, they would ride on horses or in little carriages, they would carry one big piece of luggage. And that luggage, you could empty it out and stand it on its end, and it was a pulpit. But it was also a casket, because when you laid it down, it was big enough for the minister to be buried in. The reality map for that minister was that he was going out to preach the gospel, was never coming back. He would die and be buried in that. That's quite a reality map, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. There was there's a group called People Forever International. They have according to the Arizona Daily Star, it's an organization with adherents in 16 countries. Yeah. People Forever International. They believe that they will live forever, that they can cheat death. Their reality map says, and the group began in 1960, so any surprises about that? No, it was the 60s. The co-founder, Charles Brown, experimented with what he called cellular awakening when he was doing some meditation. We are a species, he said, that has the ability to perpetually renew ourselves. His idea is that by tapping into an intelligence of ourselves, we can prolong life indefinitely. However, he offers no guarantees of immortality, since he says rejuvenation is an individual process, which is very good because about 47 of his people have died. So maybe it doesn't work so well, but you get the idea. But who could blame them? Who could blame them for grasping at straws? I don't know anybody, says Woody Allen, who can contemplate death and hum a tune at the same time. We don't want to think about death. If your reality map tells you that life ends at the grave, wouldn't it be natural to try to extend that at life as long as possible? No wonder people yearn for some method by which they can cheat death. Their reality map tells them that that is the end of the line. This was the reality map that the friends of Jesus were operating under that first Easter. See, they didn't understand Jesus coming back. Oh, he had told them, but they didn't understand it. They still thought it was the end. The end was the end. You're done at the end. But the picture we get from the New Testament is a group of people who were totally demoralized. As far as they were concerned, their dreams were futile. Their master was dead. There was nothing left for them to do but go back to their nets, back to their tax tables, back to their kitchens, try to forget all about it. It was all an illusion. Following this Galilean, he spoke of life abundant, but now he's dead. He promised a new kingdom, but kings don't die on a cross like a common criminal. He spoke of God as his father, but when he needed God most, God disappeared. How foolish they had been to give up their dreams to immerse themselves in his dream. And now he was dead, and with him, everything he stood for. That's how Jesus' friends felt that first Easter morning. It was all over. Truly, it was finished. But that was before they found the rolled stone. The stone had been rolled away, and it takes your breath away to think of it, doesn't it? The stone rolled away, and now their reality maps are forever shattered. The accounts of that first Easter morning are a little bit jumbled. Each of the gospel stories have the same kind of perspective. It's not surprising, however, that some of the details are a little bit jumbled because eyewitness accounts are always that way. We know, though, that Mary Magdalene was the first to the tomb. All the accounts agree on that. And they all agreed as to what she found. The heavy stone rolled away. The grave empty. He was alive. Now, can you imagine the impact of that event that had on the lives of Jesus' followers? Never again would they think of death in the same way. Once a reality map has been shattered, it can never be put back together again. When a stone is rolled away, the world can never again be the way that it was. At one time, people thought the world was flat. Columbus sailed and a stone was rolled away. The world was forever changed. At one time, scientists and theologians believed that the earth was the center of the universe. Then Galileo rolled away a stone. Never again would humanity's perspective on the universe be the same. At one time, people attributed illnesses to all kinds of strange influences. Then Louis Pasteur did his research on bacteria, and a stone was rolled away. And never again would we go back to the earlier ways of treating diseases. You remember the 4-minute mile? Yeah, they said for years and years and years that it could never be broken. And then in 1954, a medical student by the name of Roger Bannister ran it and did it. He did the impossible. He broke the barrier. And today, every world-class runner can run the mile in less than 4 minutes. A stone had been rolled away. And once a stone is rolled away, nothing can ever again be the same. And so, of course, this is the good news of Easter. Mary Magdalene and the other women went to the tomb, and the stone had been rolled away. Death had been conquered. Jesus' teachings had been validated. Nothing again would ever be the same. The lives of those who followed Jesus would now have extraordinary meaning and purpose and energy, simply. Once had an opportunity to go fishing in the Gulf of Mexico. The farmer had never been on a big body of water, anything bigger than the small lake that he fished back home. And so for the very first time, he was looking forward to a big body of water. But when he got there, the fishing was lousy. They caught nothing. But he had the greatest time because he could see from horizon to horizon for the entire day. As the sun came up, he took out his camera and he took pictures. And then throughout the day, he took pictures. And then at the end of the day, he took more pictures as the sun went down. He was so happy. All the rapidly changing colors were awe-inspiring. So he took lots of pictures. Then he went back home. He had them developed. Remember when he used to do that? Yeah. Anyway, he had it developed. And all the pictures came, and he made a discovery. He's looking at the pictures, and he could no longer tell which one was a sunset, which one was a sunrise. They all looked alike to him. Thanks to the empty tomb, that is like that for us. To many, it appears to be an end, the end of life, the end of a relationship, a time of great sadness, a sunset, if you will. But for those who believe in Jesus Christ, it is a sunrise, a beginning, a beginning of life with God. This is huge. This is not a small thing. There are lots of small things in religion. I could bore you with them, just like I can bore you with the big stuff, but the little stuff. But this is the big thing. Death itself has been conquered. Now, I don't know who you've lost, but I've lost significant people in my family in just the last, about 12 years or so. My mother, my father, my first wife passed away after long illnesses. My mother-in-law, father-in-law. I mean, there's a whole list of people that I love. And I know we're all of an age here, pretty much all of us, except for the balcony, that are old enough to have lost all of that. And the reality of Easter should be pulsing within us. That, yeah, we say that, we'll see them again, we'll see them again. But can you imagine the reality maps of those who do not have that assurance? That when grandma dies, that's it. Had her time, now she's gone, oh well, let's move on. Do you catch how depressing that can be? But we have a world that we live in. That's their reality map. Death is the end, no matter what. And for us, we're like, death, yeah, it's uncomfortable. I'm not looking forward to it. And by the way, I have not even bought the ticket for the bus. So, you know, get it. But when I buy the ticket, I'm not ready to get on, that's for sure. And you are the same way. And you understand that that's okay. But the reality is that's not the end. Why? Because we have a different reality map. Our reality map says that Jesus conquered that, that Jesus gives life eternal, that we can have that in the future. But here's the best good news. You can have it today as well. Because what is heaven but a place where you are in the presence of God? I mean, every definition of heaven, all that stuff about pearly gates and all that, some ways I think that's just a bunch of nonsense ways to put it together, because we cannot really understand what heaven is. It's too good. It's like saying, well, yeah, I really love heaven and I love carnival, so it's going to be, heaven's going to be like a really great carnival. No, come on, it's not even close, not even close. But being in the presence of God, that's heaven. Now, whatever that means, that's heaven. You don't have to wait. You can have that here. Now, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be like it will be when you are in the presence of God, physically in the presence of God in heaven, but you can have that presence of God in your life right now. And you can feel that connectedness to the Almighty, to the Eternal, to all of that tremendous, amazing grace right now. Many theologians or many preachers will tell you, yeah, you'll be good and one day you'll get the reward. I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you can get the reward today. It's yours. Your reality map has changed because of the stone that is rolled away. Jesus lives. Thanks to the empty tomb, death is not the end for believers. Oh, it appears to be an end. The end maybe of a relationship, though, the end of a time of sadness, a sunset. But for those who believe, it is always a sunrise, a beginning, that beginning of life with God. Black poet James Weldon Johnson wrote of a wonderful, I was going to read the whole thing to you, but I thought I'd maybe be running over, but I will someday. It's called Go Down Death. It's a poem, and I've used it in funerals. It's a beautiful way to talk about death, and he has this story in it where a sister has died, and Sister Caroline, and God sends death down to collect her. And these words are used in that poem. She saw what we couldn't see. She saw old death coming down like a falling star. But death didn't frighten Sister Caroline. He looked to her like a welcome friend. Easter sunrise changes our reality maps concerning death and the meanings of our lives. An enemy becomes a friend because the stone has been rolled away. So check your reality maps. Let us pray. Our Father, Easter is such a significant moment for us, but sometimes we just don't know what to do with it. I mean, it comes and it goes and we celebrate it and it's wonderful, but there's a part of us that just don't know what to do with it. Because it is too big. It's too great. So we ask you to open up our eyes and our hearts to the reality that this wonderful thing brings to us. To truly there is no end. That all of us seated here in this congregation, we will be together forever. And we thank you for that. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.